Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Insane in the membrane.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And this week I'm joined by Holly from the Lovely Eggs. Hello.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to make a cup of tea before we got going.
Welcome. Cheers.
It's very kind of you. Thank you. Because when you sat down with yours, I'm like, I should have done that. And then you let me. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Welcome.
How's it going? All right?
It's going well, yeah. It's like we're in the eye of the storm at the moment because we've got a new record out next month and we do everything ourselves. So the record's just tipped up at our HQ and so we're just like packaging them all and that's it's pretty mental, but in a good way, you know, in a good way.
Yeah, I saw that because it's called Existentialism.
Yeah.
And it comes out in, I wrote it down, May 17th it comes out and... And it's on. You've got. You're dealing with vinyl as well, aren't you? So,
yeah,
that's going to take up a bit of space.
Yeah, it does. But hopefully, it's in and out. That's what we want.
Yeah. Of course you do. Yeah.
But it's just like it just takes a long time to, you know, package it all up and get in, and then yeah, we do stupid stuff like we've hand numbered the first 500 copies, and then we get mixed up with the numbering, and you know, like it's just like the whole. It's just our world is just a bit. Crazy really, but you know, it's we're used to it and that's what we do, so
yeah. But that's the thing, isn't it? When you do it, when it's DIY, yeah, you realize, you know, especially if it's just the two of you or a couple of mates or something, it's a lot. Like even doing this podcast, it's just you don't realize how much goes into it until you're left to sort of do it on your own and you're like, oh shit, I don't, okay, where'd you start? You just got to get on with it, ain't you?
Yeah, totally. And it's got to become part of your life and you've got to enjoy it as well and embrace it.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Pack it in.
Well, this is it. If you don't, yeah, there's no point. If it's just, then you're just doing a job, aren't you? And nobody wants to do that. We've all done that.
That's it. No one ever wants a job. And that's part of why you go into stuff like being in music, being in a rock and roll band, is because you just never want to grow up and you never want a real job. And, you know, that's our, like, motivation for keeping on doing it. And sometimes it is dead hard when you're doing everything yourself. But the alternative is to get a proper job, you know, in an office and shit, you know, with that whole office culture, which, you know, I've had that before and it's awful, you know,
yeah.
or a sort of more physical job like shop work and stuff, which is also awful. You know, you name a job, I've done it. Like, and they're all as shit as each other. The only one that gives you free booze, basically, free booze and liberation is rock and roll. So that's why I'm sticking to it.
That's going to look great on a T-shirt. Free booze and liberation. That's a great quote. I love that. But I talked about this on another podcast yesterday. I never had I always wanted to be in a band. I've always loved music and I love all kinds of music. But I never had the idea. I was like, oh yeah, just do it yourself. It never occurred to me until much later on. I'm like, oh shit, I could have done that. But have you always been in music, always been in a band?
Yeah, and I think that the reason why we do it ourselves now is because of all the experiences I've had when being in a band. Like, I was 15 when I first formed my first all-girl band with three lasses at school, and we all just said, like, right, we love, like, Nirvana was our big thing. Like, we love Nirvana, we love Hole, we love all of the sort of, you know, rock bands. We want to be like that. Let's form a band. And it was as simple as that. And within, like, a year or two, we were on Radio 1 and the industry had been knocking on our door, and we played, like, Reading Festival and Leeds and all that, and, like, we didn't go big, but we went... The industry got its, like, grips on us, if you will, like... Mm. And it was horrible, in a way, because we went from being a band that really got on and had a lot of fun to a lot of stress and strain put on us from externally. And, yeah. And so at the end of it, when we split up, I just said, I said to our David, I'm never picking up a guitar ever again. That's it. And I didn't for 2 years. I said, I've had enough. I'm just going to go and get a job, you know, like everyone else. And then after 2 years, I just had this epiphany and I just realized, oh shit, like playing music doesn't have to be about all that industry stuff. You can just play music and that's it. And that is being in a band. It doesn't have to come with all the trappings of, you know, the London record labels and all of that. And, you know, because you hear about loads of bands being ripped off and, you know, that sort of thing. So I just said, right, that's how I'm going to do it from now on. So we didn't start with any agenda, the Lovely Eggs. We didn't want to make it or whatever that making it is or have a career in music. We just started playing together. And then it just started going along. And, oh, you'd get invited to play, you know, on the days when MySpace was going, you'd put your tunes up on MySpace. You know, you'd put your tunes up and, you know, someone would say, oh, do you want to play? Come and play in Netherlands with us. Or we've got a gig in Amsterdam and we want to fly you over. And we'd be like, yeah, sure, that sounds great, you know. But then we never really wanted to go back into that world that I'd experienced before that seemed a bit toxic and poisonous. So I didn't want to feel like, I didn't want anyone to make me feel like I'd been made to feel back then. So that's why we just do the Lovely Eggs our way, really. And that's why it's so hard work, because we're so stubborn and pig-headed to do everything ourselves.
But it's that once the, I've said, because I'm a comedian the rest of the time, and I've said this to loads of like new acts, I'm like, once the industry works out that it can make money from what you're doing, they'll be all over you, and you'll be the best thing since sliced bread. But as soon as that money stops, they just cut you off. And as soon as they're not interested, they just cut you off and push you out and get the next one in. And it's brutal. It's I've seen it happen so many times to so many people, where one minute they're the talk of everything, and the next minute they're just booted out and they haven't done anything.
I think it's very similar. It sounds really similar. And it's not something I want to put myself through. Like, I don't want to be subject to what other people say I am, whether I am good or I'm not good. Like, I'll be the judge of whether a song's good or whatever. And I think that's important for up here, do you know what I mean? Because it can destroy you, I think, when, you know, you work really hard and then someone says, oh, like, that's it for you. You know, like you said, out the door, bring the next one in. It can be devastating for people. It leads to really bad mental illness, doesn't it? And mental health problems and all sorts of stuff. So that's why, in a sense, if you set your bar really, really low, like what we do, and like and don't have any puppet masters saying whether we're good, bad, you know, then it feels like you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Doing a band. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And feel good about doing a band as well, you know.
Well, this is what we were talking about the other day. There's a comic called Joe Wilkinson that I've been doing some tour stuff with, and he's done a lot of TV. He's been on stuff, and now he hasn't got an agent. He's doing it all himself, and he goes, I don't need all those people. I got where I got, you know, and that was great, but now I can do it myself, and I don't need all these people. You know, you try and put on a show, and before you've even got any money, that like 20 people have taken a cut from your money, and you're like, but I did all the work. And it's just like that with bands. It's like, I remember, for want of a better example, Noel Gallagher once saying years and years ago, for every pound he made, someone else made a fiver. mm-hmm. and you're going, do you know what I mean? It's you know, and now we're in the age now you can do it yourself. You can put your stuff out. So it's great to see what you're doing.
And it's also about deciding, I think, on the quality of life and the lifestyle that you want, because we like quite a simple life and we like to do what we want to do, which is kind of dedicate our entire lives to music and rock and roll and that sort of thing. It's the same with you, you know, if you're a comedian, like you might want to do that. You might not want to just squeeze it into the 3 hours you've got in an evening after you've knackered coming home from your full-time job. And so if you dedicate yourself to that, there's no room for middlemen at our level. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got enough. I mean, we pay the bills. Like, we pay the bills with our everything. We don't have any other jobs. So it's definitely successful enough to live off, but only for two people with one lot of bills. Do you know what I mean? We can't afford to share it.
But it will do. It'll blow up. This new album's going to go places, I'm telling you. I was listening to your stuff today. I love it. I think I love the fuzz of it. I love the feel of it is just really nice. And I love that Panic Plants was the one.
Oh yeah,
it's such a great song. I was like, man, this is because it's just, you're right. When you're going out and you go, I've got to turn that off, and then it grows because you spend all day going, did I turn that fucking thing off? I can't remember if I did, and it just grows and grows and grows. It was such a great song.
Well, David is a bugger for. Yeah, we wrote that quite a while ago. That one.
Yeah. That was one of your first ones.
But David's a bugger for that. Like I don't know whether he's got mild OCD, but certainly on the spectrum of that. And I just noticed it more and more and more. Like panicking, have I left my cap in Preston? You know, after a gig did you lock the front door? Did you, you know? And then it was quite interesting because we recorded that and I kind of was like, oh, let's, I wrote it because I wanted to kind of like say, let's get it out in the open that this is a thing, you know, and then you might stop doing it because, do you know what I mean? When you kind of confront what you do, it might stop you from actually doing it. And I actually think it does because he doesn't do it as much as he used to.
He just doesn't tell you now in case you write a song about it.
But like people came, we had the Panic Plants choir, so we roped a load of our mates in and we got them down to the Lancaster Music Co-op to sing the backing vocals on it. There was this guy, Chris Foster, who's a musician in Lancaster, and I remember him talking to me about it, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, I really identify with it. He says, because every time I take out a plug out of his socket, I tap it on the wall three times, right? And he said, and I said, like, why do you do that, right? And he said, like, well, because I won't remember taking the plug out of the wall, but I will remember tapping it. So that was why. Because he says, if I tap it three times, I know that it's been taken out. And our friend Darren Andrews, who goes on tour with us, he won't have the radio on an odd number.
Oh, really?
So if he's in the car and he's listening to the radio and it was on volume 17 or 19, he couldn't have that. It has to be on an even number.
Oh
people
wow.
People are bloody loopy, more mad than you know it. When you think you are. You think you're a fruitcake yourself and then you realise, you know, no.
I'm quite together in comparison, yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean,
This is something that's come up a lot lately, is that because we're now talking about our mental health and our brains and how we're feeling and how we're coping with stuff, we're all starting to realise that whether you're neurodiverse or neurotypical, wherever you are, it's a weird experience being a human being. We all do odd stuff. It's, you know, I do that with the, I can't have odd numbers, but I love odd numbers. But I also can't have odd numbers. Yeah, listening to the radio, it's got to be even. But then what I've noticed with albums, because I love music, I've had music around my entire life, I've always found that track 7 and track 11 have always been the more interesting songs on an album. I don't know I mean, that might just be just my take, but
that's
what I've always found. Yeah. But I don't know.
I'll have to go and have a look now. Yeah, I think it's mad. It's like, someone was saying, like, the other day on the internet, they were saying, like, oh, I haven't, who else has an internal monologue going on in the mind, like, all the time? And I'm like, God, I can't believe you're asking that. Like, because I always do.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah. That's just like, I'm always talking to myself in my head. And in fact, I loved COVID when you could wear a mask because I could just talk walking down the street and not look like a nutter. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could just like have these conversations with myself, but no one could see. And it was brilliant.
Just chatting away.
You can walk past people.
Well, that I found.
Crap.
So last yeah, night
no
I went out.
See
so
it,
I did
you know,
need
like,
to see.
Brilliant. This is
and
amazing.
And I went out. It's yeah, so, so cool. You go on.
Sorry, go on. I think there was a glitch there.
What happens is the video might go funny, but you can still hear each other. So,
all right, okay.
That might have gone a bit funny. Yeah, but I went for a walk last night, and I realised as I was walking back, I was talking to myself out loud.
Yes. I did that. I went to collect something from the post office before, like it was a big box, and this woman let me through, and then I just started chatting to myself about stuff that I had to do. It's like, yeah. But that's the thing, like, who set the rules for what a human is, Rich? That's what I want to say to you. Who says what a human is? And I think it's when you grow up, when you're a kid, you think that there's a certain way of being, and then when you get to a teenager, you start to, it dawn on you that you're abnormal. And I'm sure everyone thinks that they're abnormal, but I certainly did. Like, this isn't how you're meant to think and feel and stuff about, you know. But that is being a human. And I think maybe the internet and like having places like Reddit and stuff, like people are discovering more like, actually, this mad behaviour that I'm exhibiting is actually, everyone else does it too, so it's fine, you know.
Yeah. You've nailed it, absolutely nailed it. One of the good things from the internet is that, you see some of the things that people post, and you're like, oh my God, at least I'm not doing that. That's out there. I mean, each to their own, I'm happy for you to express yourself. But some of it's a bit like, oh, come on, mate, that's a bit cringe. What are you doing? Put your trousers on. Do you know what I mean? Just, you know, it's what is good about the internet is that it has helped me discover so many new bands and so many, like before when we were coming through, we were just told about, like, we all read the NME, Melody Maker and stuff like that. So that's where we got our information from. But you only knew about the ones that they put in there. There must be so many bands that just disappeared where they just didn't get noticed at all, which is such a shame.
That's exactly it. That's, you know, yeah. And it's like being heard. And like, I think that record labels used to be a gatekeepers, didn't they? You know, to like, who are we going to allow the public to hear? Whereas now everyone can hear everyone. But that is a problem in itself, because sometimes there's so much music you don't know what to listen to, do you know?
Yeah.
And then also it comes down to the labels again, because I think when, you know, Spotify and these people, you know, like listening to music digitally on streaming came about, like record companies didn't really know what to do. And they were like, this is terrible piracy and all that. And now that they're kind of creating a business model, really, to try and get in on that. So like, you'll notice that every single, you know, they'll all be on the Spotify playlist, all the major label bands. It's because, you know, they know who works there to put them on there, you know, and other smaller bands don't get those chances. And it's the same with, you know, social media advertising and all that. If you've got the budget, you know, you just spam everyone, don't you? You know?
Yeah.
And that's how you get heard. And the smaller bands don't have the budget to market to that. You know,
but you've said, there's obviously a deal been struck with the major labels, because the major albums come out on Spotify like immediately, and you're going, well, there's nowhere they're not just letting that happen. The labels obviously struck up a deal, so the label's making money, and it never trickles down to the person who's done the work.
Yeah, I think that's a thing, but I think sometimes it takes people to step off grid and say, no, I'm not being part of that, you know. Mm. And if more people did that, we'd be living a better society. But, you know, we can't, can we? Because everyone wants, like, oh, I'll just be the exception to that rule. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's the greed, you know, and selfishness of human beings, you know. But that's anything, though. It's not just music or, you know, comedy or whatever. Like, you, it's important to stick up for what's right, really. But a lot of people think, oh, well, I won't because I can get this or whatever.
Well, we talk about this all the time with the Edinburgh Festival that happens every year, and it's getting so expensive now. Like, you know, you're looking at 10 grand for a flat for a year, for a month. And, you know, and everyone's up in arms saying this is ridiculous. You're pricing out working class people for a start. Yep. And then everyone's like, look, it needs us all to just not go. Just don't go. Boycott it for a year. But like you say, there'll be people go, well, no one's going. Fuck it. I'll go. And yeah, this will be exactly my chance. And it'll never, you need solidarity, which is so hard when you're in this kind of industry to find sometimes.
It's funny, isn't it, Edinburgh? Because we know a few people who've performed at Edinburgh. You know, I've seen, like, Rob Orton's a good friend of ours.
He's
toured with
Rob
us a couple
Orton.
Of times. Yeah, he came on a few tours with us. It was absolutely great. He's just
brilliant.
So talented. You know, when Phil Jupitus, he's, you know, performed up at Edinburgh before. But, you know, it's interesting. I think generally with a lot of comedians up there, and you'll probably tell me this, like, they've got a really love-hate relationship with Edinburgh. I mean,
yeah,
it's an amazing, I've been, and it's brilliant. It is absolutely amazing. But it's also, it's a bit like South by Southwest. It's got this feeling of everyone's trying to get you to their show and, like, the quality is really different, isn't it, between shows? You know, like, some is absolute dog shit and some things we've seen. We saw Olaf Falafel there. He was brilliant. You know, he was just doing a free show. We were just a free show, and we were just like, we had a little lad with us, and we were like, right, we'll go and see this guy. And he was absolutely brilliant, you know. And that's what I like about Edinburgh, is seeing, discovering new stuff. And some of the free stuff, I think, is great. But like you say, it's just crazy, isn't it? The amount of money it costs to put on a show up there. It's bloody mad.
Oh, it's insane. It's getting worse. And then I say that, and then I'm going up for a week. I'm still going.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
So even after all that, we need to boycott it. You can catch me from the 19th to whatever.
But
you know.
I think it needs to start from the top down, though, because you see, if I said, oh, Spotify is wrong, the Lovely Eggs are not going to put their music on Spotify, who would that benefit? Because it certainly wouldn't benefit me. No one would hear my music then, but everyone else would go along with it. So I think any change, whatever, whether it's like ecological change or changing, you know, the entertainment industry, it's got to happen collectively and led by the people at the top. It can't come from any other way, because otherwise, I don't know. You just feel like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, in a way.
Well, this is it. This is what I love about things like the streaming services, is that if I'm talking, like, with, for example, you guys, I can then go and have a look at your stuff and go, oh, yeah, brilliant. I love that. And then, you know, and then it helps. But what I do, I use the streaming services, and if I really like a band, I'll go and buy their stuff. I'm big on vinyl, so I'm always buying vinyl. And I love still having the physical copy. There was a band, I went and saw a band called Benefits.
And
they were amazing. And they had a support band called Scrounge. And they were great as well. And they were, it was a female singer, guitarist, and a male drummer. And they were next level. And then they had their records at the gig. And I'm like, yeah, I'm having one of them. And it was exciting. And there was just something about it, having the whole thing. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
So you can be used for good, I think.
I agree. I discover a lot of new bands through streaming, just because you haven't got the money to invest, you know. I remember when I was younger, I used to buy a tape, I think, because we didn't have a record player. And, like, even if I didn't like that tape, and it would be bought because I'd read in The Enemy or Melody Maker that it was good, you know, like, or this
That's
band
it.
Said
yeah.
they were good, you know. And you buy it and then you listen to it and you go, oh, I don't really like it, but tough shit. You know, I was listening to that tape for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months until I could afford another new tape. You know, you didn't.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, whereas you have to make yourself like it because you spent money on it.
Yeah, exactly. Or you buy you love the single, so you buy the album, and it turns out the single's the best thing on the album.
Yeah,
and you just have to go, yeah, all right, this is it now. I've got to like this. This has cost me
well,
however much it was.
You'll have to come and see us when we play in London.
I'd love to come and see you. I'd love to come and see you. Having listened to your stuff, it's right up my street. I'm so excited to come and see you.
Ace.
What's the first band you ever saw live?
I'm thinking it was maybe Hole. I was pretty young when I
really?
See Hole. Yeah, like as a teenager on my own, you know, like, yeah, at the Manchester Academy. There was Hole and Sonic Youth were playing at the same year. I don't, God knows.
Oh, wow.
I must have been about 15, 14, 15.
What a great start.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was great.
And did you know then, did you want to be in a band before that, or was that the catalyst? Was that I want to do that?
No, I think I always wanted to be in a band once I got into that sort of music. You know, like basically once I got into Nirvana and then kind of Hole and all those, the sort of Riot Girl scene. And then I started getting into like Minor Threat and Black Flag and kind of the American hardcore scene and Dead Kennedys and stuff like that. And it was oh my God, do you know, like it just opened the doors for me to like an alternative way of viewing life. And like, I'm a really big reader. And I remember like my friend Darren, who comes on tour with us, he lent me American Psycho when I was 14. I was on work experience at the local paper and he was a photographer. And I went round to his house and he just says, I've just got to buy the new Sonic Youth album. Then do you want to go come to mine for a brew? And I said, yeah, great. So we were meant to be working, but he'd skived off. And then he said, like, I'll lend you this book, but don't show your mum and dad, right? You know, it was American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis, you know.
Yeah.
And that book blew my mind because I'd never read about anything, you know, deviant at all in books before then.
Oh, like, really?
Because I was only like 14, 15. It was all Jane Eyre. And I just thought books were shit and boring because they were, you know, they actually were. And he lent me this and I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm reading about like decapitating people's heads and like this serial killer and people are saying fuck and shit and like this is mad. Like this is, how can books be like this? And then I got turned on to Bukowski and I got turned on to Brautigan and all of that. And it opened a new world for me. And that's what music did as well. Like when I got into like discovered rock and roll. It's like, I don't want to live in this world that everyone else lives in, that they call normal. It's just not for me. I don't like it and it's boring. And so I'm much more drawn to the other side.
Well, I'm the same. And I wish I'd embraced it, but I was too scared. I was always like, I know that's the world I love, but I was almost hiding it. Like,
if you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I remember when my mate played me Frankenchrist for the first time, the Dead Kennedys album, and I was like, fuck, this is it. And then he played me the video, there was a live video that was going around of the Dead Kennedys, and it's mental. Everyone's just on stage, everyone's flying around, and I was like, oh my God, I want to be in that world, but I was too scared to go into it. So I never did till now, sort of like into my elder years. I've gone like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to embrace it now. But I wish I'd embraced it when I was earlier. The first band I ever saw live was The Damned. But this is in their goth stage in the mid-80s. So So it was, I still had it. It was there, but I kind of like hid it and kept it to the side. And I wish I'd been more into it, like more embracing of it, because it's such a world. It's a beautiful world.
Yeah, I guess it's a dark world. And, you know, I think there's a darkness in me that's just drawn to that sort of, I don't know, like just way of thinking about the world, whether it's through music or whether it's comedy or whether it's literature. It's just like the twisted side is what I seem feel at home with, you know. You know, my mum, like, I've always said that I'm like odd, you know. Oh, you're a bit weird. She's a bit weird, you know. She's a bit odd, you know. And I wouldn't, like, 100% disagree, because I guess I am compared to her. I am a bit weird and a bit odd, but, you know.
But I think that's it. I'm embracing that. I grew up in this little town just outside London, and it would have been a massive, it would have been a massive thing if I'd have gone that way at that time. People would have, I just needed to fit in. But I didn't realise that fitting in is rounding off your edges, you know, and seeing bands like the Cramps and seeing pictures of them, and them, I loved it, but it also scared me. I was like, oh, they look, it's quite scary looking. And now I love it. And now that's my everything. It's like, yeah, this is it. These are the people I want to be surrounded by, you know. But at the time it was a weird, I wanted to fit in and didn't want to fit in at the same time. Very strange feeling.
Well, I think it's tough when you have a working class upbringing, you know, in a way, because there is that like expectation of how you'll behave, you know, or how you'll be, you know, like, you know, for blokes and for women. Like, I remember like coming down the stairs, like at home, and I'd have like a fake fur coat on and a tiara and some ripped tights, you know, and a skirt up here. And my mum would be like, oh, like, what you wear, you know, is that what you're wearing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, no, Mum, I just fucking spent half an hour getting ready because I'm not going to wear this outfit that I'm stood at the door ready to leave the house in, you know?
Fantastic.
And she was like mortified. I think her and my dad were like mortified, you know, like, you know, clothes with holes in them, you know, because from a working class background, you don't wear clothes with holes in them because it's showing that you're poor, you know. You've got to wear, you know, good, stitch it, or if it's got a hole, either chuck it out or mend it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They didn't get it at all. And I remember we went to a wedding and like, it's hard. I was like, you know, dressed with all holes in, and they're like, oh, you'll have to excuse her. You know, they're always apologising for me. She's just a bit odd.
Yeah, I tell you, I think it was when the Happy Mondays turned up for me. And then they were, the music that they were talking about, what they were listening to, I'm like, ah, that's the stuff I've been listening to, but secretly. So then I could start being a bit more open about what I was into. And then the 90s happened and it got a bit more and a bit more. And now you kind of, I suppose because I'm older now, I can go, yeah, this is what I'm into. This is what I mean. People, they'll either like it or they won't like it, but it doesn't matter. I'm having a good time now.
Yeah,
you know.
I think age kind of softens you a bit, doesn't it? You know, like you don't have that tribal. I remember like really hating some bands when I was younger. You know, like I just couldn't admit that I liked whatever or that I would never entertain listening to jazz. You know, at all.
No,
you know, it was just shit. You know. But now, like, John Coltrane, I think he's brilliant, you know. Coltrane, John Coltrane, amazing. Miles Davis, you know, Get Home From Tour, Put A Kind Of Blue On. Oh, it's just beauty. It's like it's like going to heaven, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. In a way.
But not back then. I was very like, if it doesn't sound like this, then it's shit, you know.
I remember being a bit of a mod in this is like 20 years ago now, so like late mod. And I got annoyed with it because they were going, oh, you can't wear this and you can't listen to that if you're a mod. And you're going, that's really good and that looks good. And like, yeah, but you have to do this, that and the other. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do this then. It's too restrictive.
Yeah.
I like, I know, it's ridiculous.
I find mod culture amazing. Like, I love mod culture, you know, like, And the heart, you know, like I used to dress, you know, like, well, I still do to a certain extent, really love like the mod fashion and like dressing like in the mod dresses and the mod shoes and all of that. But I think, it's so prescriptive, isn't it? You know, what you can be into and what you can't. And that's quite funny to me in a way. Like, I love it, but I think it's quite funny, you know.
But it becomes, you know, like the whole point of, you know, a youth culture is an uprising against that. You know, the fundamentals of mod was we didn't have a lot of money, but all the money you had, you spent on looking good, even though you were skint, you still spent everything on looking good. But then you just become another version of the establishment where someone, like the pigs taking over the farm, like they start telling you what you can and can't do. And you go, hang on a minute, that's not why I joined this.
Yeah, no, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, rules are quite funny, aren't they? Within separate little, you know, subcultures, like the mod subculture, it's quite funny for all the rules.
But and you can tell when people, certainly with mod stuff, they kind of, you can see they just do it at weekends, you know, which is what I love about seeing people when they do it, like that's their life, and you go to their place where they live and their whole life is that. They are punk or they are, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, and that's such a beautiful thing.
Well, we live really near Morecambe. It's about 4 miles away, and that's kind of like a mod mecca. The mod mecca of Morecambe. You see them on a bank holiday, they all come on the scooters. With a million wing mirrors, you know, in the fishtail parka.
Yeah, and, all looking the same. All looking the same.
But to be fair, though, they always look fucking great, you know.
They always look great,
Me and David walk down the street and you pass by a load of mods on a scooter and you can't deny how cool they look.
No. I remember going to a scooter rally and there were these massive skinheads stood at the side and they were big, they were big older dudes, and they looked immaculate, so perfectly turned out. Everything was just so there, and their Doc Martens were polished to like you do, they were like mirrors. And then this Northern Soul track played, and they all went out and they all started, they were like ballerinas, and they're all doing these things. And I was like, oh my god, this is the best thing I've ever seen. They looked the bollocks, and they knew how to dance. It was a really wonderful moment for me.
Yeah, that's a good look as well, like the skinhead, you know, that culture. I mean, I know it's kind of got a bit of a weird connotation, hasn't it, you know, with the skinhead culture. But, like, there's a lot of skinheads that, you know, it's just for the, you know, like the fashion, really, rather than, like, the politics or anything. And I think anything that has a strong look is great. Do you know what I mean? Like you say, you could be mod or a skinhead, but... You look at that. You look at those people, and they look like they belong into a tribe. You know, like, and that's important in a way to be. To make an effort to. I guess look like that, or to make an effort to be part of something that's standing up against the norm.
Yeah.
So
and it is
nice.
You always go on.
We played at this festival called Rebellion. It's a punk festival in Blackpool. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And, like, when we first got a booking for it, I was like, thinking it's going to be, like, all full of, like, 1977-style punk rockers, do you know what I mean, with Mohican. Mm. But, my God, you go in there, it's just, like, full of absolute freaks in a brilliant way, do you know?
Yeah.
There's a whole genre of crusties there with dogs on strings. Now, they disappeared from Lancaster in the 90s, like, where these people have been living, I don't know. There was loads of mods there. You know, there was loads of, like, punks too. Loads of just people into alternative independent culture. It was brilliant. It was like a mecca for everyone who was just, like, underground and, like, into subculture, really. So that was Rebellion. That was brilliant. I remember thinking, I said to David, this is great, you know. I've never seen a dog on a string for years. And crusties and dreads and all that, you know.
They used to be around all the time. And then I remember the last time I saw them was the wall went up around Glastonbury, the festival.
Mm.
And I remember there was a load of them outside and they were trying to work out how to get through the wall. And I remember going out to my car and getting accosted by a couple of them. And they're going, so what do you need, mate? You're like, you need a wristband, you need a ticket. Can we have a look? I'm like, we need that, and you need that, and you need that. And they go, oh, man, it's so different. And they were still trying to figure it out. And then they just vanished. And I haven't seen them in years.
I don't know. So, yeah. Gone in a puff of patchouli oil.
Man, that smell always takes me back to when I used to go and see the Wonder Stuff and bands like that. Ned's Atomic Dustbin and all them. And it was always the smell of lager, fags, leather and patchouli oil. Because we all had leather jackets, so they'd all get covered in shit.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that takes me back, that smell. I love that.
Yeah, so it's that. I just like people who are part of a tribe, you know, who want to feel like they belong. It's important, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny
It's just like when you see people like normally walking down the street and you think, who are you? You're just like you're going to a business meeting or you're just like looking like you work in an office, you know. I like to see the people that look like they're part of a tribe and you can spot them, you know. Even people working, you know, in a supermarket, you see a guy in a Tesco's uniform, but, you know, if he's got a mohawk or whatever, you know, like underneath. Or you can tell, you look at his shoes and you think, I know where you know, like, do you know what I mean? It's important. It sorts the wheat from the chaff, really.
I remember years ago, I was in the gym. This is a long time ago. And there was a fella getting ready. And he'd come in a suit and his shoes and his little rucksack. And he was obviously doing the gym in his lunch hour. And then as he was getting undressed, he had the DK badge on his arm. And I went, ah, look at that. Look at that. Okay, that's different. I like that. Mm-hmm. So he had this all suited and booted and done the thing. And then this proud, big DK Dead Kennedy symbol on his arm. Like, yeah, mate, there it is. There it is. And it made me really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is nice to find your people, isn't it? Like you say, when you're walking along the street and you'll see someone and you sort of nod at each other, right? I know a lot of men do that. You kind of go, all right, you just see each other. It's a really nice moment, yeah.
Well, weirdly for me, and I'm talking about being on these bloody tribes, but I don't really feel part of one or been in one myself, but I've, you know, kind of like some of the moddy elements I've really liked and some of the sort of punky elements I've really liked, but I've never considered myself to be a proper mod or a proper, you know, punk rocker, because there's so many elements of me that isn't like that. But I just think I identify with the otherness. And I remember, like, there was used to be a nightclub called the Alex in Lancaster, and when pubs shut at 11, you know, they'd ring the bell at 11, and 20 past 11 you had to be out on your ass, you know. And there's one nightclub that was alternative in town. And we used to go, and there'd be everyone in there. There'd be metalers, you know, there'd be indie kids, you know, there'd be rockers, you know, there'd be loads of people. And nice. we all like totally different music, you know, like they'd play like Napalm Death, which, you know, like wouldn't be necessarily my thing. And then they'd play like, the Pixies or something, which wouldn't be someone's taste who's into Metallica, but we all weren't at the local cattle market nightclub, which said a lot. Do you know what I mean? Like, we all gathered as sort of freaks united, like, okay, I don't like Napalm Death, you don't fucking like Pixies or whatever, you know, but we've got to live together because the alternative is a cattle market down the road. So,
the amount of times. It wasn't until later on, when I first started going to nightclubs when I was a kid, and it was horrible. I hated it. Just stood at the side. You had to wear a shirt and tie. It was way back in the late 80s. And you just stood there like a knob. It was horrible. And then, again, this is when, you know, Stone Roses and Happy Mondays and all that happened and Primal Scream. And suddenly you were going to clubs and they were playing all those music. So now you had the indie disco. And that was when I used to enjoy going. I didn't even care. It wasn't even about meeting people. I was just loved just going off and just bouncing off the walls for a couple of hours at these places. There was a club, and downstairs was like proper, like you say, like the meat market, the cattle thing. Everyone's just standing around the walls, mooing at each other. And then upstairs was the indie night. And I'd be up there, and I had such a good time. And that's where I'm at. Those are my people. So I'm glad it's still happening.
Well, I don't know whether nightclubs are a thing anymore, though. They've all closed down in Lancaster. I don't know whether it's just, like, small-town living. But, like, there used to be about 5 nightclubs in the town, and now there is, like, none. Like, there's no way you can go dancing anymore after the pub show. Because the pub, you see, and I feel like I've got to kind of cut myself off here, else we'll be here all day talking about this. But that whole thing of when we wished that the pubs would open till in Lancaster... Again, small town living. We were like, oh my God, imagine when if the pubs that have to shut at 11 and then we got what we wished for and then all the nightclubs shut down and instead all the bars can be open till, you know, whatever time they want. But the fact is that they're not because most people don't go out anymore because there's no nightclub. So it's quite funny, really. No, we had a better scene 20 years ago when we had rules. Yeah. Which is weird, isn't
back
it?
Back to that now. Yeah. Shit. But the thing is, people are skint as well. No one's got any money to go and, you know, you go and, especially down here. You know, I was in Sheffield a little while ago and I was sat and I was just having a nice time. I was watching everybody. I was just sat on my own and I had 4 pints and that cost me £20. And I was like, that's a lot, but it's fine. Because down here, it's like £20 for 2 drinks. And it's nuts. And it's like, what are you on about? That shouldn't be that. So people just can't afford it. You're looking at 100 quid just going out.
That's shocking, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, which is a shame. Because I'm going to be that bloke now. I'm turning into that old bloke. Oh, I remember going to see the Wonder stuff for 6 quid. And then you could buy a pint for a quid. It's just a good time. It's a good time back then.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Things change, I don't know, but it's weird because I don't know whether things are changing generally or just in the town we live in because there aren't any nightclubs around here anymore that I know about.
No. But, I'll be up soon. I'm coming up to Lancaster in a couple of weeks. So.
Oh, are you? What are you doing up here then?
I've got a gig. I can't remember what the name of the place is. It's in a hotel, I think, maybe. I'm doing a couple of gigs. So I'll be up. Yeah. So I'll be able to have a look and go, there is nothing.
give us a shout. We'll show you the delights of... We used to have 3 Gregs once in this town, you know.
What? 3?
I know. Yeah, 3. And that we only have 2 now, but like that was COVID that did that. But we did have 3 at one point and a Pound Bakery. And now we just have 2 and a Pound Bakery. But I can show you around if you like.
I'll be up. When I'm up in a couple of weeks, I'll give you a shout. And show me around the place. That would be good. I'm up for that.
I'll buy you a pie.
Yeah, lovely. I'm up for that. So when you started your bands, like we're all influenced by stuff. When you first, I know as a comic, I want to be like that comedian or I want to be like that. With a band, are you kind of like, oh, I love Hole. I'm influenced by Sonic Youth. I want to sound like that. Is that how it, and then it kind of, you kind of find your own style or?
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. I was listening to a podcast with Ian Mackay out of Minor Threat and Fugazi recently, and he was saying that a lot of the times bands, they're just really trying to sound like another band and they just fail miserably at it. And what they create is something completely, truly unique, you know. So, yeah, I guess in our minds, like with certain records, we'll be like, oh, we really want it to have this sort of sound, but we'll just fail miserably at getting that sound and then it'll come out as our own sound. You know, we always kind of sound like us no matter how much we try and sound like anyone else, you know. It always sounds like us because it is us two dickheads making music, you know. You can't get away from that, you know.
It's definitely unique. When I was listening to the stuff, and I was like, because normally you can go, oh, that sounds like blah, blah, or that sounds like, you know, like that. And you're like, but it's genuinely a unique sound that you've created. And it's, I love it. I think it's brilliant. I was so happy to hear it because I love finding new stuff. For me, new stuff. And when I heard you, I was like, yeah, this is it. And then when you mentioned Rob Orton, I'm like, oh my God, this is just getting better. You know,
we always like to put on a good night. Like when we go on tour, we toured for quite a while and the local supports would just be organised by the local promoters. And like sometimes we'd play with bands that just either weren't our style or were just playing dog shit, to be fair. And it was always music as well. And like me and David, like we're into, obviously we're in a band, we're into music, but we're into, you know, books, we're into literature, we're into, you know, poetry, we're into comedy.
Yeah.
And we wanted to put on a good night for everyone from start to finish. So we started asking people to come on tour with us and tour as a package. And I think the Phil Jupiters did the first one, I think, as Porky Brilliant. The Poet.
Oh, yeah.
And he came on tour with us with Mr. Ben and the Bens, who were a great band, originally from Lancaster, now living in Sheffield. And then after that, Rob Orton came, and Brilliant. We did with Mr. Ben and the Bens again. And then we've toured with all sorts of... There's a poet called Thick Richard. Do you know Thick Richard? He's from Manchester.
No.
He's brilliant. So we had Thick Richard, then we had a band from Brighton called AKDK, who were absolutely amazing, just so good. So we're always trying to, like... And then we had, like, another band last tour was Thick Richard again, and it was Arch Femesis. So we're always trying to discover new bands and give them kind of a help to go on a tour, because we're doing all right now. You know, we can sell out shows... you know, in medium-sized venues. So it's kind of nice to give other bands the opportunity to play to a big crowd.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to give... Our audience are really supportive of us. They're really loyal, which we really appreciate, and we're loyal to them as well. And it's nice to give other bands the chance to play to nice people, you know, who are going to listen, you know.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So it's nice, and we love it. You know, we love playing like that, and we know that every night we're not going to be embarrassed of what's on before us, or like thinking, "Oh, this is dog shit. We're going to have to go on after that," because we know we've put it together. So
I love that. It's very much like I was talking to Kingsley, the lead singer of Benefits, and he said that he was bigging up the support bands that they had.
Yeah.
And he was like, mate, you've got to check out Scrounge, they're amazing. And they really were. They were absolutely first class. And there's another Brighton band called Regal Cheer
that are
very much, they're kind of like this punk kind of, they're doing their own thing as well, which is really good. And it's good that, like you say, you get to a position where you've got an audience where you can go, actually, come and check out, come with us and we'll show people you. And that's really nice. It does make a difference. And having these conversations with you now has given me so much. I'm so pumped because you look at the news and you see that, you know, venues are shutting down left, right and centre, and people are talking about there isn't anywhere for bands to play. And you know, you start to think that it's all coming to an end. But then nature always finds a way.
Well, it does. And I think me and David are really, really proactive, and we believe in building the world we want to live in, you know. So if we don't want to live in a world where this happens, then we don't subscribe to it, or we don't be part of it. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, if we want to see stuff happen, we make it happen. I mean, we did the whole six-part TV show, six-part series called XTV. And it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we're just talking about how there's not a showcase on telly anymore for like poetry, comedy, music, art, literature, just to show people about that. Like, the culture show isn't on anymore, and that used to be quite well-known stuff. But, like, you know, in the 1970s, they'd have all these sort of, you know, arts programmes where they'd, you know, talk about books, like, in a circle, and they'd film it, you know, and that was put on telly. Or they'd have, like, a watercolour painting workshops, you know, on TV. They don't do stuff like that anymore.
No.
So we decided, right, we're gonna make a show. So we did, and we approached our friend Casey Raymond, who's an artist and he's an illustrator, but he also makes videos, and we said, do you want to make a TV show? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we made the most ridiculous, deranged TV show to the history of man, and it's six parts, and it's crackers really, but it's the sort of TV we want to see on telly. So we made We didn't just like moan about it not being there. We made it. And that's like that's a total example of the lovely egg. So you don't moan about what isn't there. If you want to see something, you just do it, you know. And that's what we try anyway.
That is amazing. That is a really beautiful way to finish as well. I love that. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Holly. I've really appreciated it. And your tour. So when are you going on tour?
We're going on tour in May.
Yep.
I think it starts on the 22nd. I think it's, or is it the 23rd, whatever a Thursday is. 23rd, 22nd. And we're going to Glasgow, Edinburgh. We're going to Newcastle. We're going to Leeds, which is sold out. We're going to Bristol, which is sold out. We're going to Birmingham. We're going to Nottingham, which is sold out. London, we're playing at Earth in Hackney.
Oh, good venue. Great venue.
Is it? Yeah, I've been told it is. I've been told it is. So hopefully it'll be good. And then Chalk in Brighton, and then back up for a biggie in Manchester.
So Chalk as well is a good one. Chalk's a good one. That's where I saw Benefits. Yeah, good there.
Right.
Saw the Hives in there as well. That's a good one. And then back up to Manchester. Brilliant.
Manchester for a biggie at the New Century Hall. So it should be good.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, we're looking forward to it. It's just, touring is just great. We really love it.
I'm so pleased to have met you. It's so lovely. And the new album comes out, Existentialism, May 17th.
That's it.
That's when that comes out. And when I'm in Lancaster in a couple of weeks, I'll give you a shout and we're going to have a pint. That'd be lovely.
Please do. That'd be great, Rich. Thanks.
Fantastic.
Love.
Thank you for joining me. This has been Insane in the Membrane. This has been Holly from the Lovely Eggs. I've been Rich Wilson and we'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane. Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming and podcast production.